I'm Giovanna Pineda, Assistant Professor of History, and you're listening to the Richest Documentary Podcast. Welcome to the Richest Documentary Podcast. Richest, the regional initiative for collecting the histories, experiences, and stories of Central Florida, is an umbrella program housing interdisciplinary public history projects that bring together different departments at the University of Central Florida with profit and nonprofit sectors of the community in order to promote the collection and preservation of the region's history. By facilitating research that records and presents the stories of communities, businesses, and institutions in Central Florida, Richest seeks to provide the region with a deeper sense of its heritage. This series will feature a podcast every 2 weeks, in the middle and at the end of each month, that will explore various aspects of Central Florida history. In today's episode, Volusia County Railroad History, an interview with Seth Bramson, Kimberly Hausbruck examines passenger rail transportation in Volusia County and the effects of rail service changes on the region.
Hi, I'm Kim Hausbruck. Welcome to this podcast on the history of the Florida East Coast Railway in eastern Central Florida, particularly Volusia County. As the state of Florida and Amtrak consider a plan to return passenger rail traffic to Central Florida's East Coast, it is a good time to explore the impact of the railroad on our culture and economy during the early and mid-20th century. To find out more about the Florida East Coast Railway in Central Florida, I talked to Professor Seth Bramson, the author of Speedway to Sunshine, the story of the Florida East Coast Railway. Professor Bramson explains his position with the railroad.
I am the senior collector of Florida East Coast Railway and Florida transportation memorabilia in America. This past May was 53 years of collecting. Our collection of that material is the largest in the world. It is larger than the State Museum's collection, and it is larger than the Flagler Museum's collection. I am one of only two people in the country who bears the official title of company historian with an American railroad, and that, of course, is the Florida East Coast Railway. And my book, Speedway to Sunshine, is the official history of that great and famous line.
Florida's rail system was originally made up of many small railroads that linked a few towns and cities, but few of them covered substantial distances. These railroads were purchased by other railroad companies, and those might be purchased by yet another company. It is in those first small railroads that Volusia's rail history began to take shape. While few people would think of Volusia County as a center in railroad history, the county has more historic connections with the origin of the FEC than most people would expect. Many small towns in Volusia County that are now cut off from rail service altogether had rail service on the predecessor railroads. Those familiar with Volusia County will recognize some of the cities and towns that served as origins and terminating points for the FEC's predecessor railroads.
They had their own predecessor railroads, and the first of those was probably the Halifax and Indian River Railway. And that came into existence in September of 1891. And the idea there was to build a railroad from Daytona on the Halifax to some point on the Indian River near Titusville. That was about 50 miles. And, of course, Titusville in North Brevard County. But at any rate, that railroad would later on become part of the FEC and taken over by the Jacksonville-St. Augustine Indian River. But there were other railroads that affected the county, and certainly the St. John's and Indian River Railroad is another interesting railroad because that was actually incorporated in 1876. And the problem with all of these is that there is so little remaining in the way of records of any kind, but the company was actually operating from Titusville to Lake Harney. And then that was taken over by a company called the Atlantic Coast St. John's and Indian River Railway. And we know about all this because in writing Speedway to Sunshine, I had gotten from the FEC all of the predecessor material. And so we know that the Atlantic Coast St. John's and Indian River operated in Brevard County, and they eventually would become the Indian River Division of the Jacksonville-Tampa and Key West Railway.
These predecessors would be the basis for the early days of former Standard Oil executive Henry Flagler's railroad empire. Flagler did not begin building a new railroad immediately. Instead, he chose to purchase the smaller predecessor railroads and connect them before he began adding new segments that would eventually connect Jacksonville with Miami along the East Coast.
Mr. Flagler purchased the Jacksonville-St. Augustine-Halifax River Railway, his first actual purchase, in order to improve the transportation of material to the then under construction Ponce de Leon Hotel and Alcazar Hotel in St. Augustine on December 31st, 1885. And then, of course, he immediately upgraded it. And that first of the purchased predecessors. But the Jacksonville-St. Augustine and Halifax River Railway was taken over by a railroad with a very similar name, the Jacksonville-St. Augustine and Indian River Railway, because as Mr. Flagler extended the railroad further down the east coast of Florida, the name was changed to show that the railroad was now a good bit further down the coast.
The railroad continued its progress southward. With that progress came another name change to illustrate the geographic area the railroad served, or which Mr. Flagler intended it to serve eventually.
The name was changed on September 9th, and the letters patent, which authorized the change by the state, were issued on September 13th, 1895. So essentially, the Florida East Coast Railway adopted that name in September of 1895.
Much of the FEC's traffic was headed for points south of Volusia County as the seasonal tourist trade grew in South Florida, but all of Florida benefited from the boom of the mid-1920s. Of course, all of that changed when the bust came in the late 20s. Like everything else in the country at that time, the FEC was affected by the depression that followed the bust. After the FEC went into bankruptcy, service in Volusia County would change permanently.
The receivership was a result of the bust that occurred after the great Florida boom of the mid-1920s. During the 1925-26 season, there were three passenger trains and two freight trains a day each way between Jacksonville, Miami, and Key West. And with the depression, business just tanked. The FEC was down to 1 7-car passenger train each way each day and 1 15- to 20-car freight train. That was the story on the branch lines. And business just fell off something terrible. And what happened was, of course, that at this point you now have the government beginning to build roads. So the receivers, who had been appointed with the coming of the bankruptcy in 1931, recognizing that they had to do something that was going to staunch the losses, they knew that the main line would continue to support the passenger service. But in 1932, what was called bus truck service was substituted for the regular train service on the Orange City branch. Now, that branch line had also been known as a separate railroad prior to the FEC taking it over. It was called the Blue Springs, Orange City, and Atlantic. In 1932, they substituted this bus truck service on the Orange City branch, and then they abandoned and dismantled that branch in 1934.
The availability of automobiles would also affect passenger traffic on the branch lines. As branch line service ended, communities changed.
Orange City is still there, and they're still a good, viable place. But a lot of the places on the branch lines just basically ceased to exist. You look at places on the line that they used to come down from East Palatka into Bunnell with metropoli such as Spuds and Yelvington and Roy, and they don't exist anymore. I mean, you just go through there, there's nothing there anymore. And so it was on the branch, for example, when the FEC built the branch that came through Maytown. At one point, there was service from Titusville through Maytown and actually went into Sanford, so that there was service that came down from Maytown, actually came down into Okeechobee and then went around the lake to a place called Lake Harbor. Now, that line was abandoned north of Okeechobee in 1947 when they built the cutoff from Fort Pierce. And the passenger service, however, on all of the branch lines ended by 1941.
Today, the FEC does not carry passengers at all. I asked Professor Bramson about the events that led to the discontinuance of passenger traffic.
The FEC came out of bankruptcy on January 1, 1961. They had been in bankruptcy for literally 30 years. And when they came out of bankruptcy later that year, later in 61, the non-operating unions, the unions that did not actually operate passenger and freight trains, announced that it was time for the negotiations to begin for the new contract, and that they were demanding a 10.63 cents an hour wage increase. Now, you have to remember, that may not sound like too much now, but everything is relative, of course, and when you talk about 10.63 cents an hour in 1961, 62, 63, that was a pretty decent wage increase. So the unions came to America's railroads and said, here's the deal, here's what we want, and the FEC, under the direction of Edward Ball, who was the trustee of the Alfred I. DuPont estate of Florida, he and Win Thornton, Mr. Thornton was then the executive vice president, would later become president, later chairman of the FEC, they went to the union and said, look, we've only had three profitable years in the last 30. We need for you to work with us. And the response of the unions essentially was, we don't work with anybody. This is the deal, take it or leave it, and if you don't take it, we're going to go on strike. And the FEC met with the union 32 times. And at the last meeting, Mr. Thornton said, look, we don't want a strike. We will offer you more than the national settlement. We'll offer you 4 cents an hour now, 4 cents an hour in 6 months, and 4 cents an hour 6 months after that. So in a year, you'll have 12 cents an hour increase. And the national union said, no, you give us the increase we want. We're not going to bargain individually with the railroads. Everybody had to agree to the same deal.
During the strike, the FEC continued to operate freight service, but the passenger service changed significantly.
On January 22, 1963, the last trains tied up, both passenger and freight, and not a train moved, not a wheel moved on the FEC until February 12th. Of 1963. It took the railroad about 20, 21 days to figure out that they had all this freight, they needed to get it delivered, and indeed they wanted to do something. So they got their supervisors together, and with the supervisors, they then started operating one train a day between Jacksonville and Miami, and then they began advertising for people to come to work on the FEC. And that's when the violence began. Several people who were with one of the unions were indicted and arrested. Trains were shot at. One of our engineers who's currently working today still carries a piece of a bullet in the shoulder. There were a couple of dynamitings. Robert King High, who was the mayor of Miami, was demanding that because the FEC's charter said that the FEC had to run at least one passenger train a day, daily except Sunday, between Miami and Jacksonville, that by God, they better put a train back on. Well, the FEC said we can't because of the violence. And the violence, by the way, did continue, not with bombings, but there were some shootings. At any rate, the railroad went to court, and eventually the Florida Supreme Court said, look, your charter calls for it, you've got to do it. And so the railroad put up signs in the stations and on the passenger trains that said, the Florida East Coast Railway is operated under strike conditions, use premises and ride trains at own risk. And so we ran our first passenger train during the strike on August 2nd, 1965. But at any rate, it really was a wonderful service. The problem was that nobody used it. And it reached the point that they were carrying about three people a day. And so they petitioned the state for abandonment, and the service was abandoned on July 31st, 1968.
When Amtrak was formed, the FEC had the option to allow Amtrak to run its passenger service. The railroad did not elect to restart passenger service at that time.
Amtrak came into existence on May 1st, 1971. The strike would go on for another 5 years. The management of the FEC, Mr. Thornton, and Ray Wyckoff, who by then was the executive vice president of the railroad and was basically running the railroad, felt very strongly that with the strike still in full swing, that it simply was not a viable option at the time to join the Amtrak system. So you remember that the railroads that were operating passenger trains when Amtrak came into existence in 1971 had the option of either joining or not joining. If they didn't join, though, they had to continue to operate their passenger trains. But the FEC was not a passenger train operator when Amtrak came into existence, so they did not have to be part of the system, and the company at the time felt that it was not a viable situation or idea and it could be dangerous.
The state of Florida, the FEC, and Amtrak tried to return passenger traffic to Florida's East Coast in 2001 and again in the spring of 2010. Professor Bramson was along for both rides to provide narration about the historic route. I asked him about the goals of those trips and to talk a little about Volusia County's place in them.
I think and believe that Daytona is still the largest city in the country without passenger train service. Hopefully, though, that is going to change in the next several years because current management feels and believes that we can certainly, in partnership with Amtrak, have passenger trains operating over the FEC again. I was on not only the June 2001, but the trip that we operated earlier this year. Now, the 2001 trip was an Amtrak FEC demonstration trip to show that the Florida East Coast Railway was not only a great operation, but that our roadbed and rail are in absolutely superb condition, and that we could certainly handle passenger train service and operation. Now, on each of those trips, as the company historian, I served as the host for the FEC and onboard train announcer. And I gave a running description of where we were, the histories, and talked about the great history of the FEC. And at each stop, I welcomed the dignitaries aboard. We were accompanied on the 2010 trip by the chairman of the board of Amtrak, whereas with the 2001 trip, we had the president of Amtrak on board. And not that it makes that much difference, but what I saw in 2010 was that I felt, and it looked like, there was a much stronger commitment, not only by the online municipalities, but by the state and by the federal people, to see to it that passenger train service is going to return to the east coast of Florida.
Professor Bramson offers a solution for those confused by the prolific number of similar-sounding predecessor railroad companies.
The best way to ferret out the confusion, of course, is to get a copy of Speedway to Sunshine, the story of the Florida East Coast Railway, which has just come out in soft cover. This book, Speedway to Sunshine, is the single best-selling regional railroad history ever published in America.
Thanks for joining me. I hope you enjoyed this podcast on the Florida East Coast Railway and Volusia County.
Thank you for listening to the Riches Documentary Podcast. Feel free to contact us with any questions or comments on the program that you just heard. Please join us for the next episode, The Mouth, Central Florida Tourism Icon.